The other interesting thing for me in terms of my captaincy thinking at the moment for the first six, what happens to from game week 7?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, patrons. It's Tuesday, and I hope you enjoyed the start to Correspondent Week yesterday. More pods coming out today. Is it another three today, is it, James?
Yeah, three today. Burnley, Tottenham, Watford. They're all out of date already. Jokes. Yes. I need the Tottenham one a little bit, but it's still relevant.
So make sure you stay tuned for those. Your Patreon pod today is around captaincy in the first few weeks, James.
Yep, and we've got no script as per usual to this plan, so it will go wherever it wants to go. But before we do, I'd like to talk about some law changes in the Premier League this year.
Okay.
Because I think it possibly has a small influence on this. So, Mike Riley has used the term toenails and noses. And what he means by that is it will not be a factor this season in VAR decision making. They are going to do two things. One, they're going to use a thicker line when there's offside decisions. Two, if those lines touch, the benefit of the doubt will go with the attacker. So even if the line's on the wrong side, but it's touching, they'll give it as onside. They reckon that if they'd applied that last season, there would have been an extra 20 goals scored. Which, when you think about it, it's one every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extra goal on the tally. You might remember Patrick Bamford's offside goal at Crystal Palace.
Pointing where he wanted the ball. Yeah.
So the UEFA definition this year is that, and there has been some frustration about armpit offsides, but that's where the line is going to start, is armpits. It's not going to start on end of sleeve, like in the case with Patrick Bamford, where his whole fucking body was about a yard onside, but about half of his sleeve was offside. That shouldn't be an issue. So, I mean, that's a perfect case of one where that's goal next year. Good. That's how I read it anyway.
Good. Sounds a positive. I want there to be less time wasting over millimetres. And if it just give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker, if it's that close, move on. So
one thing that will still frustrate is the amount of time. So one of the big feedbacks, which I thought was a bit of a nonsense, actually, was that decisions during the Euros was much quicker. You have to remember that during the Euros, UEFA appointed extra officials for all games. There were dedicated VAR offside officials. Obviously, the Premier League is not going to have that. The guy and whoever his assistant is have still got to do it all themselves, basically. There is no dedicated VAR offside official. Decisions will be off-screen. 100% in the stadiums. And I think 99% on TV as well. So again, during the Euros, we didn't see the process of the drawing of the lines. We kind of got, once decision was made, we'd get a still image a little bit later showing what the final outcome was. That's what I believe is going to happen with the Premier League, which I'm not sure about, because I kind of like to see the what's happening to let me know how close it is rather than the not know. But then it also doesn't create that horrible, oh my God, look at this fucking dickhead with his doodle drawing out. So, but we won't get to see it. It will just be a case of VAR check. That's the big thing they've got to do instantly, is say there is a VAR check.
Yep.
And I'm really concerned about how that's going to be in grounds.
Because
I think our TV pictures, if they're sensible about it, they'll put up very quickly a graphic saying
and
VAR
it's fine,
review.
When there's a break in play, so if someone scored a goal or not, or what, VAR check, it's a break in play. But say someone goes down for a penalty, but the game's carried on, and then on the screen in the stadium, it flashes up penalty VAR check, but the game's still happening. So you've got the...
Well, it won't.
So we won't know...
You won't know in the stadium, mate.
...that there's a check going on if the game is live. So they're not even going to, where they say it's off screen, they're not even going
to. There is no way, and to be fair, this is one I'm.
So the game could go
I'm
on for
kind
2 minutes.
Kind of unsupportive.
Yeah, I can understand that.
If the game is in play, to put an announcement over the tannoy or to put something up on a big screen saying VAR check is going to be very distracting to players.
Correct.
And imagine someone's on a counter attack and that comes up And then you think, oh, what's the point? And maybe it's not given anyway.
Yeah.
So that's the one in stadiums where it's a decision on a penalty and the game is obviously still in play. I can understand that. I'd like to think over those ones, most people are probably, if there's an appeal, if you're in the ground, you know, right? Because people will shout or whatever. In 99% of occasions, unless it's perhaps a melee of players and there's a possible handball or something, most people will understand, oh, we've appealed for a penalty. In your mind, I think you know it's being checked. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the moment when a goal's scored and you don't know if someone's offside or something, you just lose yourself in the celebration. They're two completely different instances. So I can get that when the game's going on, not making the announcement. But yeah, if the game's dead, it's got to be quick. It's got to be quick. I even would like, I think, linesmen to put their flag up. Would be a really easy way to notify everyone that a check's going on.
Okay.
Or even fourth official on the halfway line.
Makes more sense.
Wave a fucking white flag. Whatever, right? Wave something. That would do. Just as a visual. A bright fucking pink flag. Illuminous bastard. To say, look, check.
Yeah,
that'll do. Well, it's all people need is some sort of visual. That's why I always complain about with the goals offsides. I need the visual. Mm-hmm. The flag acts as the visual for me to understand what's happening. Anyway, that's too much on offsides. One of the reasons to really mention this is penalties.
I knew you were going with penalties.
So first thing to say is the threshold for VAR will be higher. A little bit like the tolerance used in Euros, which I think most of us quite liked, actually, was like, we're only going to get involved in VAR if there's a clear and obvious error. And I think generally UEFA got that. There was a couple of decisions we didn't like maybe the Switzerland player Freuler, who was sent off. The Danielson one was controversial, but wasn't because of the impact. But actually, those two decisions were ones where it was given as red cards by the on-field official. And it was enough doubt to say, I can understand that. Let's live with it. That's the decision. So VAR's not got involved and overturned it, right? There were 125 penalties in the Premier League last season, which is an astronomical amount. And wasn't there like, I don't know, 30 in the first three or four game weeks or something? Like absurd. That's the highest ever total. When you think about that, 380 games in a season, that is a penalty every three games.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's too much. Yeah. I spoke about this on a pod the other day. It's too many penalties. I don't think anybody really wants penalties for soft decisions or minimal contacts. Like, if it's contacts and it impedes the player, fine, it's a penalty. There's certain ones where I think we'd like to see given. There was an example one last year with Sadio Mane at Sheffield United, where he rode the tackle, but he got wiped out, right? But because he stayed on his feet, was never given. If he goes down 100%, it's a penalty. Those are the sort of ones we're quite happy to see given because it's impeded his movement trying to get onto the end of the ball. But it's the minimal contact ones, the, you know, like...
Rashford.
I'm thinking Mbappe against Portugal, for example. There's a little bit of a shove. Sod that shit. Raheem. No one really wants that as a penalty. To be honest, yeah, Raheem against Denmark, yeah. That was a penalty. No, it wasn't. So they want to get the number of penalties down, is the bottom line. The quote that Mike Riley has used is, contact, not necessarily a penalty. So he's basically saying, there's been some last year where they've forensically looked at it and they've gone, oh, do you know what? There's a little nick on his shin there or something. Although it's not impacted his movement, the player's gone down easy.
Yeah, penalty.
Yeah. They're not necessarily going to give them now, is the point. Accidental handball in a build up to goals will stand, but if directly creates the chance, goals ruled out. But I think the big one from the FPL perspective is expect less penalties this season.
So, accidental handball in the build up. It won't get given, but if it creates the goal-scoring chance, it will get given.
So I'll give you one that really confused me last year. Was a goal Liverpool had ruled out at Tottenham, where Roberto Firmino controlled the ball with his back to goal, basically on the halfway line. And I'm not even certain it was 100% handball. But the way the ball fell to him gave him an advantage.
Right.
They played it out to the left-hand side. The cross came in. Mo Salah scored. Now, my understanding this point last season was if either the scorer or the assister handles the ball, even if it's accidental, it will get ruled out. So this wasn't Firmino's assist, right? It played out to the left, then Salah scored. I didn't understand why it was ruled out. For me, that wasn't part of the rules that I understood. It was another incident that just added to the confusion that everybody had last season. Anyway, if that happens now, 100% it will not get ruled out. That's the point.
Right.
So think about what they're doing here in terms of the tweaks. We can expect similar number of goals. They're saying last season 20 goals would have been scored extra because of offsides not being overturned and goals standing. And we're probably looking at a handful of goals that would have stood over handball. I'm going to guess around about 5 to 6, maybe to 10 max, but probably single digit numbers. Just say we're putting another 25 goals on top of that. I think we can assume that we're probably taking them away from penalties and getting us probably nearer to a bar of probably 90 to 100 penalties rather than 125. Now, just looking at that across the board of Premier League clubs, you would say one less per team in terms of scored penalties, perhaps. But as we know, there are certain teams who win more penalties than others.
Correct.
Manchester United, namely. Are we saying that's 3 less penalties for Bruno Fernandes this year? Now, to equate Bruno Fernandes having 3 less penalties, and I think he missed one last season, he scores the majority of them, right? He's a good penalty taker, even if you may or you may not like his style. 3 less penalties for Bruno Fernandes could quite easily be 24 less points. That's quite big, isn't it?
And does that mean Jorginho is no longer an FPL asset?
Jorginho is no longer an FPL asset.
I was going to start with him as well this season.
Jorginho is never an FPL asset.
Oh, mate. No, but he was, but I thought it was good.
You're taking the piss. You ain't starting with Jorginho.
Yeah, I'm not starting with Jorginho, and everyone knows that. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I wasn't starting with Bruno anyway this season, so it doesn't make much of a difference in my thinking around penalties.
I don't think it should either. Like, I'm not saying what I'm giving you there in terms of Bruno Fernandes, in my opinion, is possibly likely to have, say, 3 less penalties. Although it could be a lot less because of United had so many, it's a little bit of an anomaly anyway.
Then they've got
they've got a
player in Sancho who's a dribbler, and it's the dribblers that win penalties when they go and run into the box. So Sancho might win a couple extra.
As we know by the big stat in last year with Jadon Sancho, as we spoke with Andy, most penalties won in the Bundesliga last year. Oh, yeah. Exactly. How many was it? Oh, actually 0.
For Dortmund, so, right?
That's correct. So, yeah, make your stats up as you will. Bruno, and I'm not saying what I'm telling you about penalties, by the way, should influence your decision on Bruno Fernandes. If you're going with Bruno Fernandes, go with Bruno Fernandes. I think it's something you should be consciously aware of. And one of the reasons you should be consciously aware of it is I think Bruno scored one goal outside of penalties from, I think, game week 25 onwards. Now, if he goes for a spell like that of 13, 14 odd games with one goal from open play and the penalties stop, he's not an asset.
No, agreed.
Reality.
Agreed. He's not at that price.
He's just simply not.
No.
Now, United could get 15 penalties this year. They could. They could get 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to have a major impact on Bruno. Now, when you look at the other premiums, Harry Kane, irrespective of who he's playing for, penalty taker. Mo Salah, penalty taker. Johnny said to us he thinks Kevin De Bruyne will be on penalties again as well if Kane doesn't sign for Manchester City. So they're all on him.
Mm-hmm.
So it affects all of them. It doesn't just affect Bruno. It affects Mo Salah as well.
It's just the proportion of points that come from penalties for Bruno makes it... Mm-hmm. And if Kane leaves Spurs, I'd expect Sonny to be on penalties, would you?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's in that same bracket of premiums.
But,
so,
but then, unlike the other players, in the case of Heung-Min Son, he wasn't on them in the first place.
No.
So it can only add to his potential,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. As opposed to the others who are obviously already on them. I know a lot of people like to pick penalty takers as their captain, and they like to have penalty takers in their teams. I mean, you talk about Jorginho a little bit in jest, but it's part true. if Jorginho was not a penalty taker, we wouldn't mention him from game week one to game week 38, other than if I said, oh, the way Jorginho played in that game tactically, yada, yada, yada. We would never mention it in a breath from an FPL perspective. And the same applies to other people. As soon as El Ghazi gets in the Villa team at any point, people go, oh, I think El Ghazi's on the pens for Villa. And he might be, right? And that's what makes him, I mean, he's a bad example because he shoots for fun. But it does influence the decision-making, knowing you've got a potential penalty taker as well. You're going to hear one on Correspondent Week coming up over the next couple of days that tells you about someone who's not been on penalties before that might be, and it's going to prick people's interest.
Yeah.
It just adds a little bit of weight. Once you go, oh, Andy might be on penalties as well. Okay, interesting. Actually, there's two players I get mentioned over the next 2 days about potential penalties. Anyway, to relate it to the subject of captaincy, does any of that influence your thinking, yes or no?
No.
Same for me.
Ironically, I didn't look massively at captaincy cover when I was putting my draft squad together. And the closer we get to the start of the season now, the less likely I feel like I'm tweaking my draft at the moment, bar any big transfers coming in and out, because everything that I've heard in the first 9 Correspondent Week podcasts that we've done has only reinforced the decisions I've made so far, not made me think, oh, I'm completely off the mark here. And there's a couple of things in it. So Salah is going to be heavily captained, and I've got Salah in my squad. My next most expensive premium player is Heung-min Son. And I just ask myself, in any given week, am I happy to captain Heung-min Son? Yes, I am. My next two players within my current squad that I would throw the armband on would be Antonio or Ollie Watkins. And both have fixtures that I'm happy captaining them. So, for example, if Spurs start misfiring in at the start of the season, we'll go week by week in just a second. Say Spurs plus a couple of weeks, you're looking dog shy and I think, you know what, I'm not having Son against Watford.
There's every possibility.
There is. I'm not doing Son against Watford because Watford have translated their defensive solidity into the Premier League. Game week 3, at home to Crystal Palace, Antonio's fit and raring. I don't mind captaining Antonio at home to Crystal Palace. So Ollie Watkins, I don't mind captaining him. And then defensively, I've got Trent and Robbo in my squad right now. So if I think Liverpool are good for a clean sheet and an attacking returns, I don't mind captaining them either. So really, between those players, depending on form at the time and who I feel like, they've all got captainable fixtures. So I feel like I've got coverage. Worst case scenario, I feel like I've got coverage enough that I can swap between them. Now, I don't have any City. And I don't have any Manchester United at the moment. But within the first 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be making transfers. So.
Well, as I said to the advanced tiers on a little video I did for him yesterday, I just got to the point where I was probably leaning to the idea of having Dean Henderson in goal, ironically. This is off
captaincy. And now he's obviously COVID. What have you. Well, he's got the effects of COVID,
Where there's every chance he's going to miss game week one, obviously, so... Yeah, I don't have a United player at the moment, which is an issue.
I've got Shaw sitting there, but I'm actually going to transfer him out for Luke Adin.
You're not going to stick the armband on Luke Shaw.
No. I don't need to anytime.
How many? And it's probably a wider debate before we come on certain game weeks. How many captaincy options do you think you need?
Three or four.
That many?
Three. I mean, 2 realistically. In any given week or overall in your squad?
Just overall in your squad. Oh, so even looking aside from fixtures. And do they have to be premium players? I mean, you've mentioned the idea of captaining Antonio or Watkins. And I'm sure there's probably a point last year, and I'd be interested to get some feedback on this, actually. There's probably a point last year where all of us captained someone who wasn't in... I will say the top 7. Mm-hmm. And to clarify that, no disrespect, but I'm not including West Ham in that. I'm saying the so-called Big 6 and Leicester. Leicester have really pushed on the last 2 years. The reason I leave you out is because I think yourselves, Everton, Leeds had little spells Was there a period early where someone captained Danny Ings? I'm interested to know, was there periods where people captained the likes of Antonio, Bamford, well, back end of Calvert-Lewin, the season, Danny Ings?
Jay Lings got a few armbands when he burst into the team.
Jay Lings, yeah. Mm.
So for me, I look at it and I just think, yeah, no, I'm happy. Watkins, so you say how many captaincy options do you need? Well, what defines a captaincy option? Like for me, I'm looking at my squad in any given week, Trent and Robbo, Son, Salah and Rafinha, Watkins and Antonio are all captainable. I would feel a bit wary captaining Tony, Saar, Smith Rowe, Luke Shaw, Ben White, Ayling and my keepers. But all of the others, Robbo or Trent, Salah, Rafinha, if Leeds have got a good fixture and in form, Watkins and Antonio, I'd captain any of them if I thought the fixture was right and I saw what I wanted from the team.
Yeah, I think someone like Rafinha is a great shout in terms of right place, right time. You know, it might be like Watford at home, game week 7, where there's a few problem fixtures, for example. Something like that could get you out of a hole and it's quite nice. Game week 1, are we all doing the same thing?
Yes. I mean, it doesn't inspire me with any joy, but everyone's going to have the armband on Salah. I'm going to put the armband on Salah.
Are there any alternatives you want to consider for that in game week 1?
No. No.
What about Chelsea at home to Palace?
I don't own any Chelsea assets. I don't see myself starting with any Chelsea assets. They're one of the teams that I need to keep a real close eye on in the first 3 or 4 weeks because I can't see myself going through the season without at least one at some point. So I don't know where I'm going to go, but I just want to keep an eye on them.
I feel there's a real build-up building, and it's also building in my mind as well, about Kai Havertz. Not from a captaincy perspective in game week 1, just to have him. And I think we're going to speak with Ted a lot about that on Correspondent Week. Be out for you on Saturday, get his thoughts, which we're going to record after Chelsea play Tottenham. So we'll be quite up to date in terms of Chelsea's most recent pre-season friendly and that as well. That's the only alternative, really. It's Chelsea. I think Man City, like, I mean, look, you could stick the armband on Kevin De Bruyne any time, right? Away to Tottenham, he could go off. But it's not, is it?
No.
You've got cojones to go against Salah game week 1, I think.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that really tilts it for Salah as well is the game week 2 fixture. It's not like afterwards where you go, say like they had, I mean, they've got Chelsea at home in game week 3, but say they were going to City in game week 2 as well. There would then be a case to say, can I skip it game week 1? Because game weeks 2, 3 and 4 are quite tough, for example. But I think, yeah, game week 1, last year I went against it. And I think a lot of people did because pre-last season, you looked at Aubameyang's first 2.
Yep.
Which in hindsight, Fulham away, which wasn't a bad call, right? Arsenal won 3-0 on the day. And then West Ham at home in game week 2, bearing in mind at the time, you just about survived relegation the previous year, looked like a really decent, good opening decent 2 fixtures. Games, yeah. And I think that's people like me gambled Aubameyang. Even though Aubameyang's got Brentford this time, he won't be making that gamble this time.
No.
I mean, what's Aubameyang's ownership, like 3% or something? He'd have to be going off big, I think, for him ever to get the armband again, wouldn't he?
Yep.
Especially now he's a forward. So Salah game week 1, I think you're brave if you go against it. Yep. And some will. And if you get it right with a Havertz or a Werner or something like that, or a De Bruyne, good luck. Game week 2, before we want to talk about options, I want to speak about Harry a bit. So time recording Tuesday morning, I don't know what's happening yet in terms of if he's turning up for training. You thought he might, I think he won't.
The reason being, it's so long until the 31st of August. Like, he can't be on strike for 4 weeks, surely.
I think if Kane goes to Man City, his debut will either be against Arsenal in game week 3 or more likely Leicester in game week 4. And all I see on my timeline, night and day, is about people worrying about how they're going to force in Harry Kane for Norwich. I'm pretty convinced he won't be a Manchester City player by the time that game comes around.
Yeah.
To stop overthinking it. If it happens, it happens. I see some people going, well, if he's there, I need to take a -8 in game week 2. Well, if that's the case and you're that desperate for it, then I think you need to set up your squad structure differently if you're that bothered about it.
Yeah.
We're hearing plenty of reports over the last 24 hours that Chelsea have bid for Lukaku.
100 million plus Marcus Alonso. I mean, correct, that's no small amount of money. If Chelsea buy Lukaku and he comes in at the same price as Kane, 12 million he'd have to come in at. Oof, that gives people a big choice.
If Lukaku signed for Chelsea in the next 3 or 4 days, which I don't think it happened, by the way. Lukaku said he wants to stay in Milan.
Yeah, I don't see it. Because they're trying to sell Martinez, the other striker, well, right?
I think Chelsea are trying to capitalise on the fact that Inter do have some financial issues, which is kind of why Antonio Conte left the club. But Lukaku has said he doesn't want to go, and Inter also said they won't sell Lukaku. He's like their main star. He's going to stay.
100 million is no joke, mate. That's a lot of money.
If Lukaku did rock up at Chelsea in the next 4 days, that then does give an alternative to game week one, I think, to Salah.
Mm-hmm.
Or obviously, if Harry Kane's a Chelsea player, it won't happen. Kane, the point is, I don't think you should believe in yourself where it's a -8 to get Harry Kane in for game week two. And as we discussed with Johnny Pringle, I don't think it's worth it.
Yep.
Arsenal, Leicester, Southampton, Chelsea, Liverpool afterwards. I honestly think you can wait.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's plenty you can miss. But think about people. I have to have Kane. Honestly, Arsenal, Leicester, Chelsea, Liverpool are 4 out of 5 fixtures. 3 of them are away. And I know he loves a goal against Arsenal. And actually, if he's there, Kane against Arsenal game week 3 would be nice. But do you want to rip it up? Think of what you can be getting from your midfielders and your defenders with the extra money over that period.
Yep.
It's not just Kane versus Watkins or whatever. It's Kane versus the rest of the money. Game week 2, what are you thinking at the moment, captaincy?
Sticking with Salah.
It's obvious, isn't it?
For me, it is, yeah. I mean, I'd prefer a City asset at home to Norwich, but I don't have one. If City look really good, I would be, and I don't have any other problems to fix. I'm not against a sideways move, like Salah to De Bruyne and just go for it, but we'll see. I've got the coverage there in Salah, so simples, easy.
Yeah, it's the ones that I think are going to change that are your likes of Riyad Mahrez, Kevin De Bruyne. I don't see many people in our community starting with Kevin De Bruyne, personally.
No.
But, you know, let's say St. Amps to Salah in game week 1. Let's say he got injured game week 1. What's the contingency plan?
I'd sell him. I'd just sell him. Go sideways to Kevin De Bruyne.
Trent?
I could always captain Trent. No problem. Yeah.
There's an alternative. I think it is definitely Liverpool or City in game week 2, and that doesn't need to be overthought. Game week 3. You're thinking Sonny, aren't you?
Or Mikel Antonio.
Home to Palace.
Mm.
I think that probably is dependent on what you see from Palace in the first two,
correct,
isn't it?
Correct. Had they not bought Joachim Andersen, I think I'd be more swayed. I mean, he's a good defender. And it's swayed by what I see from West Ham at the start of the season. We're going to be recording Correspondent Week with Chris soon. I'm quietly confident that the start of the season is going to be pretty decent for us. We're gathering some form. Players that have been away are getting back in now, in the likes of Rice and so on. A couple more in through the door. I think we'll have a good start. I think Antonio has pretty much been involved in all the preseason games and looks fit. I said it when I was talking to Ray about West Ham. I mean, if he played 38 games, he'll score 20 goals, Antonio.
He won't.
He won't play 38 games, I know it. But if he did, he could. So you never know. He might just manage to get a full season out of him. I don't mind Antonio, but if it wasn't Antonio, I've still got Son there. And if Watford look like they haven't adapted to the Premier League, I don't mind going to say. It's almost more actually a Spurs thing. The closer we get, the more this kind of circus is gathering momentum at Spurs, the more worried I am for how much of a meh season you're going to have.
Thanks, mate. Love you too.
Yeah, I just look at Daniel Levy and I'm just like, take the Kane situation And then we layer in what we talked about on the Q&A yesterday. And I'm a player, another player, like the chap you want to get from Atalanta. And I just think, why do I want to work for that prick? If that's how he treats his players, or if that's the way that the club does business, why do I want to go there? And I don't think he understands the impact that his nature is having on the image of Spurs for other players. Why would they want to go there? I mean, money talks, and yeah, fine. But the top, top players of the world, like, well, I'll go and sign a contract. They'll hold me to ransom or treat me like shit. So I'm worried for Spurs a little bit. So I've got the backup there of Antonio if I decide I don't want to go with Sonny. On the flip side, if Sonny's in form, not going to overthink it, straight on the armband on him.
One of the things those who are familiar with my deadline stream will be familiar with me saying is there are weeks to gamble and there are weeks not to.
Mm-hmm.
Game week one, in my opinion, is not a week to fuck about.
Nor is two, for me, in my opinion.
You are not going to get me saying Salah is essential, but you are brave as hell if you go against it. Game week two, if you go against Liverpool or City, I don't know what the alternative. Game week three, because of the City v Arsenal fixtures, and we have to say that Arsenal, I think, are improving defensively, mm-hmm. although there are some concerns about personnel and fitness ahead of the start of the season, but this is going up to game week three. They might be in a better situation. City v Arsenal and Liverpool v Chelsea is what makes you look elsewhere. So I think the immediate reaction in that circumstance is, well, what are the other so-called Big Six clubs doing? Tottenham have Watford at home. It looks the greenest fixture. We don't quite know what we're going to get from Watford yet. We think they could be quite good defensively, but we don't know. At the moment, it looks a good fixture. Bruno away to Wolves, which I think in your mind is like, don't like that. But as we discussed with Bradley yesterday, Wolves might be quite an open team this year and it could be quite different. It doesn't obviously have to be Bruno. It could be Sancho, Greenwood, Cavani, yep. Whatever your fancy is. Leicester at Norwich. So you can throw that in there, can't you? Ian Ashos, sure. Vardy's. You can throw them in there. Villa have got Brentford at home. Leeds have got Burnley away. And as you said, West Ham have got Palace. So that's the sort of week
you can go for it.
Yeah, punt it. And game week four is similar because then you've got City at Leicester and Liverpool at Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you're eliminating...
Chelsea Villa, I think it'll be a tough game for Chelsea.
You're eliminating some of the others. The standout one is obvious. It's United again at home to Newcastle. I say United again, and I say that really for those... If you've gone Bruno captain in game week three, you're going Bruno captain in game week four.
Yep.
I think if you're in that position. I think United at home to Newcastle is the standout in game week four. But again, there are some alternatives. Tottenham are at Crystal Palace. Arsenal have Norwich at home, which after a difficult start, we might have some clarity on punts like Pepe or Aubameyang, for example.
But and also
Everton have Burnley
Arsenal,
at home.
Arsenal, like, if Arsenal play the same team for the first three or four games, you understand that it's a 4-2-3-1 and that the front four, Smith Rowe's playing as a number 10 with Pepe, Saka, Aubameyang, Lacazette, and they look in good form. Smith Rowe is my only Arsenal attacking asset, but he's a number 10. So why not stick the armband on a 5.5 midfielder?
Ooh, yeah, well, you can do that.
I just need the evidence from game week 1, 2, and 3.
Well, you need to see Smith Rowe goals, I think, in the first few games to make you think that he's someone who's capable of hitting double figures. Because at the moment, he doesn't. And even what Adam, you'll hear from Adam on tomorrow's Correspondent Week Arsenal pod, you know, he doesn't talk about Smith Rowe getting towards double figures of goals or anything,
no,
does he?
No.
He's talking single digits and probably mid single digits, but representing that could be decent value at his price point. Agree. From a captaincy perspective, no, I think if you were going an Arsenal player against Norwich, you'd want to go with the potential explosiveness or with of Aubameyang, Lacazette or Pepe.
Yeah. If you don't know,
those
them,
are the guys who could go big.
Mm.
But then you don't have to start with one of them Arsenal players if you decided that's what you want to do. It's the same people go, you can't start with Bruno. Well, what's to stop someone going from Salah to Bruno in game week three and then going back in game week five? Like if you set your squad up good enough Absolutely, that's a very viable strategy.
Correct.
Salah to Bruno in game week 3, back to Salah in game week 5.
Yep. And look, I mean, Everton are at home to Burnley. By then, we might see what Rafa's defensive structure is. And Luca Dean, if you think Everton are good for a clean sheet at home to Burnley because they've been stubborn, Luca Dean isn't a bad shout. We've talked about how he's going to be on so many set pieces with Sean. So stay tuned for that pod.
Spoiler.
Yeah. So that's the only, I won't go into detail, but he's going to be have the opportunity for that. Luca Dean's not a bad shout if you've got the cojones to do it. I do think we should be more open-minded than just think we need one or two premiums for captaincy this year.
Just another spoiler, because we won't do the next Patreon podcast till the Everton podcast is out. That podcast is going to make a few shit yourselves about Everton. It is fire. So I think when we look at those first four game weeks, in fact, let's skip a couple, because 5 and 6 looks like Salah again, doesn't it?
Yep.
Really. Palace at home, Brentford away. City against Southampton again is the alternative, game week 5. So I think game week 2 and game week 5 is very similar. It's Liverpool or City is your alternative if you want to fire against Salah. Do you really want to fire against Salah, though, when he's got Burnley at home, Palace at home with the two fixtures? We know about his potential record in these sort of home games. Game week 6, they're at Brentford, and there aren't brilliant alternatives, partly because Chelsea play Manchester City and Arsenal play Tottenham. United have Villa at home. United at home to Villa does not look better right now at the moment than Liverpool at Brentford.
No.
Again, there's an obvious element of unknown about Brentford. So my plan at the moment on Bruno, this would be my captaincy for the first 6 game weeks. Norwich away, Burnley at home, Watford at home, Crystal Palace away, Crystal Palace at home, Brentford away. That's just Salah and Son.
Yeah.
That's Salah 1-2-5-6. Sun 3-4, with the one that's the concern is Bruno game week 4 or a Manchester United alternative against Newcastle. That's the one that's the concern. That's all right, though, isn't it?
More than. I'm very relaxed about captaincy, as you might have gathered, just because I'm very comfortable just sticking the armband on any player anytime.
I think, in summary, one is not a gamble week.
Yeah.
Two, you've got a choice of 2. 5, you've got a choice of 2. 4, there is a standout, but alternatives. Game week 3 is the week from the first 6.
Just go mad.
And by the time we get there will be a really popular selection, be it an Iheanacho, a Son, or if Kane against Arsenal, for example. But right now, that's really difficult to know who that popular selection will be. The other interesting thing for me in terms of my captaincy thinking at the moment for the first 6, what happens from game week 7?
Fixture swing for Chelsea.
Spot on. Mental fixture swing for Chelsea. Southampton, Brentford, Norwich, Newcastle, Burnley. Now, by that point,
Havertz, straight in, or Lukaku, or Werner might have figured out how to stick the ball in the back of the net, you know? Plenty of options at Chelsea, for sure.
If we consider over that period as well, that Salah still has Watford and Brighton over that period, and again, the two good days that Liverpool have a good fixture, 8 and 10 are also two good fixtures for Manchester City as well. So Salah, Son, and a Chelsea player from 7, we get up to game week 11, 3 captaincies. Obviously, players have got to stay fit, etc., etc.
Yep.
And your mindset will change. But it's interesting to look at that and say, okay, there's 11 week stretch there of fixtures. Nearly a third of the season, we only need 3 players for the captaincy. When we kind of started this conversation by saying, is it okay to go with Leeds players, West Ham players, Everton players? And these are going to come up at certain points. I mean, Leeds, that we've spoken about a Chelsea fixture swing. If you don't fancy the Chelsea fixture swing, Leeds have got Watford at home that day. Like, can you go with Rafinha or Harrison or Bamford? Again, because Liverpool and Man City are playing each other, that's the sort of week that you can spin the wheel a little bit again.
Yeah. That's your wrap, James. That's your Captaincy Pod patrons. I hope it's given you some food for thought on where you are going with your armbands. We have a quiz tomorrow. I just forgot.
Oh, yeah, I've got to do that. Thanks, mate.
What's the quiz about? Remind me.
It's straightforward. Be 50 questions again. And it's, I'm going to give you the player and you're going to tell me the prize.
Okay, straightforward enough. Looking forward to it. This season's prize, obviously, yeah.
Or I might say, who's the only 5 million defender at Watford, for example.
Right, okay.
But it's going to be something like that. There isn't one, by the way. But yeah, 50 questions, quick fire again. A little bit similar to last week. But yeah, all the theme is FPL prices.
Nice. Stay safe, patrons. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Be nice to each other. You always are. Cue music, please, Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.